he doesn't know. Maybe he thinks I really enjoy hoovering, and which I really don't. I hate it. So, you know, maybe he thinks I love hoovering, and maybe he thinks he's doing me a favor because I get to do my womanly duties whilst I'm being really pissed off. So if we go to the extreme, it would be me complaining to all my girlfriends and saying, you know, this and that, and I'm doing all this and I'm doing all that. And then they go, oh, girl, he doesn't appreciate you. Throw him to the curb. And then I go home and I'm like, dude, we had this fight about hoovering an hour ago and I didn't see you pick up a single hoover. And so we're done. Is that what you mean by?
Yeah, I think that's a good extreme example of what it can look like. And it's not about the hoovering. It's about like
It's about the
not
dishes
having
and everything
the,
else
you know, like the yeah, well, you know, that's what shows up as a front-facing problem. And then there's always what's behind it, right?
Welcome back. We are on today with my guest, Sam Koukatas, on the Tool for This Shit podcast. I'm your host, Angie. So for this week, I've partnered up with a company and I'm giving their subscribers a full discount on one of my workshops, which is how to create your podcast concept and never run out of ideas with the bonus microphones simplified. And I am extending this offer to you as well. So when you subscribe with them, which is around $45, you get access to my workshop for free, how to create your podcast concept and never run out of ideas with the bonus microphone simplified, plus access to a bunch of whole other workshops and software from other podcasting mentors, marketeers, and growth strategists. So it's the first time I've joined them, and I'm going to include the link in the show notes. Once it goes live tomorrow, and the offer is valid from tomorrow, Tuesday, October the 12th at 11 a.m. UK time, which is 6 a.m. Eastern time, and ends on Wednesday the 20th of October at 4:59 a.m. UK time, which is Tuesday, October the 19th at 11:59 Eastern time. So, just before I forget to tell you, if you like the show, don't forget to tell a friend, give it a 5-star rating and review, and you can also subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Radio.fm, Amazon Music, wherever you're listening to it right now. And the more you do that, the more it helps new listeners discover this show. So I'm super grateful for you doing that. I know a lot of podcasts, I think some people are a bit scared to subscribe because they think they're going to be charged. My podcast is free. It is free to listen to. And the more you do that, the more it helps new listeners discover the show because then it gets pushed up in the ranking, and that's how people get exposed to new podcasts. So now on to today's episode with Sam, the philosophical coach. We talk about how to meet not just our partners, but also ourselves with fresh eyes and not getting bogged down with all the baggage from our past. So, without further ado, please help me give a big warm welcome to Sam. Let's begin. Welcome, Sam.
Hi, Angie. Lovely to be here.
No, thank you so much for joining me today. So, I was on your podcast, Humi in Life, a few weeks back, and when we did our chat on your podcast, you said something, and I like stopped you mid-sentence. I was like, wait, I'm taking notes because I needed to talk about this on my podcast. So I'm really excited what we got to find a time to do this and talk about the topic of how we see our romantic partners, or to be more accurate, how we don't actually really see them for who they are. And there's a whole thing behind it that I know that you working on, and that, you know, you have many, many thoughts and stuff about that and experience around that. So before we dive into that, Sam, please introduce yourself, where you live, and what you do.
Sure. Well, first of all, Angie, it's a real pleasure to reconnect with you. It was really great having you on the show, and it was a lot of fun. You know, that's one of the key things I really enjoyed. It's like there was a lot of humor, even though it was a coaching conversation. There was a lot of jokes in there, so it's really great to be here.
Yeah.
So I'm Sam. I'm from UK. Well, I've lived in the UK now for the last 11 years, and I live in London now. And, you know, what I do essentially is there are two things, and both are under the umbrella of the organization, The Philosophical Coach. So one is I have a podcast, which is called This Humean Life. And what that's about is really taking my experience of 12 years of looking at the question of what it is to be human and the nuances around being human and questioning who we are really, and looking at that both from, like, I do some solo episodes, and then I get great people on like Angie, and I really examine that with them as well. So that's what I do in terms of the show. Yeah. And then my coaching business is based around really three components. And it's looking at how can we transform what's possible in the realms of performance, leadership, and communication. And when it comes to relationships, that's, you know, just a critical element of all three of these. And I'm really excited to explore what that looks like when it comes to romantic relationships in this conversation.
Yeah, because romantic relationships, like, sometimes, like, if I know that, like, when I'm single and I know that I have a lot to do, like, a lot of things I want to achieve, like, you know, so let's say, like, you know, for the podcast or doing podcasting workshop, I'm quite resistant to date because I know that it's such a big distraction, especially when it gets, you know, especially when I get triggered or things like that. And I'm like, I don't want a distraction. And I've been like that for a very long time, like ever since my early 20s, where I'm like, no, I'm not going to distraction, because it is such a big component of our life. And if it doesn't go well, it can have a really big influence on whether we are, you know, successful in our work or not. So yeah, I don't know if that's in the way you meant when you said that it's such a big component of all these different areas in life.
Absolutely. Well, any relationship is a massive component, right? So, like, for me, like, any coaching conversation, you're looking at relationship. You're looking at relationship to yourself, or you're looking at relationship to others, or you're looking at both of them. And then romantic relationships are ones where you're looking at your relationship to self and you're looking at relationship with others.
Can I just, like, quickly, I know this is a tangent, but I know that, like, if I was listening, I'd be like in my mind going, wait, because he said, like, he lives in London for 11 years, but where's the accent from? Like, is it Australia or New Zealand? Because I know, like, I'm terrible at, you know, I know you told me, but, like, can you tell us?
Yeah, I grew up in Australia.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you. Because, you know, it's going to be like in our minds, like, wait, where's the accent from? So, but I love it because it's so much more, you know, singing, like, you know, when we're here for too long in England, it can be so, like, quite harsh sometimes, like the way we speak. So, like, my K's are, like, really awful. It's like I'm, you know, it's just very brutal. So, yeah. So I want to ask you, like, what got you interested in this part of psychology or life, like how we see our partner? Like, what's that bit, like, what got you to there before we go into what that really means? Like, what got you into it?
I think there are a few things. So I think it probably helped already having, like, a deep interest in understanding the human condition for, you know, a good 12 years. And, like, that was a focal point for what I used to do, which was be a philosopher purely in an academic context. And then what happened is in 2017, I ended up doing a program which is well-known around the world called the Landmark Forum. What I saw inside of this program was that I had a very pessimistic view of human nature and human beings driven from my philosophy. And inside of this work, what I saw was a possibility to have relationships in life which went well beyond anything I'd ever had before. And that included in romantic relationships. But first of all, I guess I had to see the relationships that I had where I had a way of listening to people which was essentially fixed. And by being fixed, I had created that person as this is who they are really. And once I had that view, that's all I saw.
Is it like you mean like when you have like confirmation bias? So if you think that person is stubborn, you are going to keep looking for proofs that they are stubborn, regardless what they tell you. Is that what you mean by fixed listening?
A little bit like that. So I think it's more like a lens from which I actually visually saw the person. Like, so absolutely, it's definitely the idea of having evidence for your point of view and having a confirmation bias. But it went beyond just having a confirmation bias. It was how I then treated people in my life and those relationships, whether or not I wanted to be around those people, because I was constantly looking at them from a place of someone to avoid.
Can you give like an example of like, what would it be bad to avoid? I mean, because I mean, I think we all have those people where we're like, oh, you know, do I really need to go see them? Oh, you know, yeah. Like they just do things and you feel like, oh, you know, that person is so cold and so, you know, so intolerant, and they claim they are tolerant and it's just pissing me off. Like, what's wrong with, you know, with wanting to not being around them?
Well, it really depends on what you value. So in my case, the relationship which really was based on a fixed listening was my mum. Mm-hmm. And I had gone from having a really close relationship with her to when my parents separated, you know, she went through a really hard time. And I didn't really recognize the way she was being. And I was going through a really challenging time myself. And I wasn't someone who at that time could take on other people's worries and issues. Like that was just too much. So mm-hmm. I would avoid her as a consequence. But I also had a level of resentment around something which had happened in the past. Mm-hmm. And I kept that resentment there for, I think it was about 5 years. And it wasn't until I actually had a conversation with her where I'd rediscovered something, like I discovered how courageous a woman she was, that I expressed my love for her and I apologized for, you know, essentially creating this distance between us. Mm-hmm. And I got to hear that her experience was, you know, essentially what had happened is she would call me from Australia when I was in Oxford. And the conversations would only last for about 6 or 7 minutes. And this pattern happened for around 6 months. And each time I assumed that when she hung up the phone, what the reason was is because I was close to my dad and I reminded her of my dad. Mm. And when we actually had this conversation in late 2017, what actually transpired was she said, I hung up the phone because you weren't listening. Mm. And that stunned me because I'd never even contemplated that. Well, that's what it was. Mm. So, you know,
well, it's hard to listen when you feel resentment or you feel that you can't really take on someone else's pain or, you know, whatever, all of those things that you said, it is hard to listen and people can feel it when we're not listening.
100%, 100%. And I didn't know that I could, that was really what was coming up. Like I didn't realize I wasn't listening, but I hadn't done any work around like the distinction between listening and hearing at that stage.
Yeah. And you can't really connect with someone if you're not listening, if they're not being heard. I mean, the thing is like what you said is like, it's really relatable. I think we all do. I mean, I've also, you know, had a very fixed view of my mom, you know, for a long time. And that's really whole, like, you know, stopped the relationship to grow until like I did, you know, really like a lot of work on myself and went to therapy and all this kind of stuff. And all of a sudden it's like, I see her so differently. I get to just observe instead of reacting all the time. And when you walk into a situation with a fixed idea of, I almost thought like, what does she want from me? Like, what is she, you know what I mean? It was just this like weird stuff I had in my head. And then when I realized, oh, yeah, nothing, we're good. Like, you know, like I could relax and now we have a great old time, you know, and I'm really grateful for that. But I can see how what I used to think, what I would blame her for, I realized it was all in my mind. And like, you can really waste some precious years by doing that. And so I hear what you're saying, you know, like we can, It is difficult, right, when you have this thoughts in your mind. But I think we all do that to a certain extent without even realizing.
Yeah, I think absolutely. It's really hard to see our own blind spots, if not impossible.
Oh my God, impossible. This is why you need someone who's good at mirroring, like this therapy when I was like the CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy. And like when I would explain something, and the great thing is it's not talking therapy, so I'm not there like for hours talking, which is really hard because I'm a chatterbox. But I would bring up something and then she'll just go, wait, hang on. So that's just like you then. And I went, what? And I would let go and I go, yeah. And she's like, you two are very similar, you know? And I realized, I was like, oh my God, like we are really similar. And I thought we were so opposites. I really thought we were so opposite in so many ways. So yeah, you just, you know, and obviously I'm like simplifying what the therapy was. It was a lot, you know, she didn't just do it that way, but kind of is what she was saying. And yeah, it's interesting. So obviously, so that is what sort of led you to looking at a bit more deeply as to how you were viewing people, right? How you were seeing people and how I was coming from this fixed place, you know, not really being receptive. So is this how you sort of like from there, did you then start to look at your romantic relationship and go, how, you know, am I doing this here?
Yeah. So with the romantic relationship that I was in at the time, I ended up leaving it. And I wasn't really in a space to be in any relationship at that time. And I think it took a couple of years before I actually was wanting to do that. Mm-hmm. But by the time that I got back into a space of wanting to have a romantic relationship, I had already really looked at what had happened in the past and where I'd created this fixed listening of who people are. And I was clear on what I wanted to create in a relationship going forth and the possibility of doing that, rather than feeling limited in what a relationship could look like for me or who I could have a relationship with or any of these other points of view which I'd had before. Like, I used to be an academic, so I was like, I'm only going to be happy if this person's an academic. Complete BS.
But maybe what you wanted was someone who could stimulate you intellectually, and they don't need to go to university for that. Sometimes just like a sharp mind, that's, you know what I mean? Like, sometimes it's just like maybe what you think you'd get out of it, but you may not want someone who studied like, you know, astrophysics, damn it. Because in Danish we say, anyway, it doesn't matter, but yeah, astrophysics. You know, they may not be street smart, and that may be annoying. You know, they may not be, you know, so there's, it's like, what is it that you enjoy about academia? And if it's like the challenge of your mind, well, someone else could do that who's not an academic.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, there are so many ways in which you can create stimulation, in a relationship, which were not based on that. But more importantly, I guess for me is I wasn't fixed. So why would I understand anyone else to be fixed? And I think, I guess it goes back to your earlier point when, like, why did I get interested in seeing how, like, you know, who a partner was or who they could be for me? Mm. It's because I got really present to the fact that I wasn't fixed as a human being. So if I wasn't fixed as a human being, I was constantly a space for me to grow, then why wouldn't I allow that same opportunity to the kind of people that I would come across and potentially date or be in relationships with?
Yeah. And you know what? That is probably one of the things as well that is a challenge in a relationship, because we are not fixed. But however, when you meet someone, you kind of in your mind have made this little agreement with them. I mean, you didn't tell them, they don't know about this, but in your mind, you made this agreement that, you know, you're always upbeat, you're very funny, and you vote conservative. I'm just making this up. And in your mind, you go there, so that satisfies my little inner agreement. And then, you know, a year later, a lot of stuff happens, you evolve, and then all of a sudden they're like, they're not as funny anymore because you don't find them funny anymore because they're always telling the same joke, or maybe they're grieving. So, you know, they need a bit of, you know, they need time for that. There could be all kinds of things, and people don't like change, but they're not the same either. We're not the same, but we don't want them to change. So it's like, I don't know if, you know, if this is sort of like, I guess, making like a good parallel to what you were saying, but I feel like that is the bit, is accepting that people will change, and is also, so it's one thing, is like accepting that people will change because we change, but it's also like, how do we even see them? Like, how do you know that you're really seeing your partner versus projecting onto them? Because it's very, unless you're always asking clarifying questions, right? I remember I had to do that with a previous relationship where I was often asking to clarify, because the way he spoke was very different to the way I spoke. And so I'm glad I clarified a lot of things, because the first time he would say something, I'd be like, wow, that's a bit rash, isn't it? That's a bit intense. And then he'd clarify and I'm like, oh, okay. He just didn't have the language to really explain it properly. So, but he had the mind behind it, you know? So, like, how do you circumvent that? How do you know that you're really seeing your partner?
So I wouldn't want to assume that I am. Okay. I feel like that would be...
Ooh, it's like a surprise every time. Who are you in my bed? Ooh, you know, like, it's like a first time every night. Okay, yeah.
And, you know, I would say this as well from the point of view that... So I did a lot of work... in a confidential capacity, where I got the opportunity to look at distinctions which we don't normally look at in life. And one of them was looking versus seeing. And the idea was to really get to be present to how often you just look at someone, but you don't actually really see them. And I would be lying.
Mean like when you sit on the tube and you're just looking ahead because you sleep? Kind of like sleeping, but with your eyes open and people think you're staring at them? Is that what you mean?
It's like the doziness of life, right? It's what's called the tranquilized obviousness of life, where you're essentially just, your brain is already filled in all the details. Like, you're looking at them, but you're not really, really present with them. Your thoughts are somewhere else and you're thinking about your work and all this other stuff. And, you know, sometimes I'll have a conversation with my partner or someone else and I'll say, like, I wasn't listening. Can you please repeat what you were saying?
Yeah. Oh gosh.
You know, I just get present to the fact that, oh, I was suddenly in my, in my internal state as opposed to listening. So let me re-presence, get back in the moment, be with her and acknowledge that that's what had happened.
Yeah. But I think that's something that we could all feel. Like, sometimes we feel like, well, like, you're there present in the same room as me, but you're not really there. So that doesn't count as quality time. And then we're pissed off because it's like, what are you thinking about? Like, where are you? It's like, you know, it's like physical presence is not the same as actually being present.
Totally.
Sorry,
go ahead.
No. So we went from, like, you know, you seeing versus looking at, like, seeing someone versus looking at them. So looking at them would be sort of more superficial, and seeing them is seeing into them. Is that what you mean? Seeing is their soul?
It's a little bit like you, so the idea of seeing, and it's an abstract idea, so if it doesn't make sense, just stop me. Mm-hmm. But the idea of it comes, it's consistent with questioning who someone is really. You're questioning in this moment whether you actually see someone. And what's the point of doing this? Well, the point of doing this is essentially, so when you're questioning whether you see, the first thing you're going to be in the space of is knowing. You're going to be in the space of knowing, like, oh, obviously I see them. They're right there. Mm-hmm. And it's only by looking at this, wait, there's something kind of fucked up about that. Like, they're over there, but I'm here. So how can I be seeing them if they're over there and I'm here? That means I'm seeing them where I am literally physically not. So in the space of that question and actually seeing, oh, wait a second, that's strange. Like, that's not physically possible for me to actually see them if I'm here and they're there. So how is it actually that happens that it's possible? Okay, well, I've got to question whether I'm really seeing them, as opposed to just taking for granted that the person in front of me I'm seeing, as opposed to just looking at.
And when you say that you're not there, is it because you say, like, you're not, you are like 2 meters away, you're not in the spot that they are seeing into them, like almost like on a soul level or molecular level?
It has the same, I think, resonance in terms of the experience. But when, like, for me, when I'm seeing someone, my experience is that I'm over there where they are. So, for example, if they're saying something,
right,
I can get the world of their concerns because I'm listening and seeing them from over there where they are, rather than from all the stuff which is going on with me internally.
Oh, so you're talking about empathy?
It can have the impact of creating empathy in a situation, but it can also provide a space to really get what someone is dealing with or what someone is saying in a way which is unusual in the realm of communication in the world.
Is it like when you feel someone, like, and I don't mean feeling by touch, I mean feeling like, you know, you could be sat next to someone not speaking, but, you know, someone that you know and you used to see, you know, on a regular basis, so you're familiar with how they're supposed to feel when you're around them. You know, people make you feel comfortable, uncomfortable, whatever, you know, or you can feel when they're happy or sad. And the thing is, you can sit next to them and all of a sudden you can feel something in your body because you're feeling what they're feeling. That's what I mean by empathy. And like, it's like they could be telling me, yeah, I'm fine. I didn't have a really good night's sleep. But what they're really not telling me and what they're really feeling and what I am seeing is that they're feeling so stressed. They have like they are feeling, I can actually feel it physically how they're feeling. Is that what you mean by that?
I think that's a good example. I think you're really able
to horses speak have that, for example. Horses are very attuned to people's emotions.
Yeah. And I think the word you use there is a good one, attuned. You become really attuned to what is being said and what's behind the communication. And then also, if I'm assuming that I get it, like, I can also question whether I really, you know, am getting what she's saying. So, but the attunement to what is actually being communicated is a really important aspect of being able to see someone as opposed to just be looking at them. Because when we're looking at them, we've got all of our internal stuff going on. And when we've got all our internal racket going on, then you can't actually hear what they say. You will listen, but you won't actually hear it.
Yeah, but I think that's almost like requires the other person to, and this is going to go like into like a woo-woo tangent, but I truly believe this. It's going to, they have to also be open. So, because some people, I don't always feel what people are feeling all the time. I have to be open to it too. But especially if I'm in a very vulnerable place in my life, so I don't have those walls around me to protect myself to feeling how other people are feeling or to protect myself from the news and that kind of stuff. So if I'm in a good place, either way, actually, if I'm in a good or in a vulnerable place, if I can't feel, if I'm hearing someone talk and they're saying things that's supposed to be conveying that they're really upset, but I'm not feeling anything, I know they're lying. Or in my mind, they're lying because it's just words coming out. They're not, you know, it's like when politicians are going, yes, you know, and I'll save all the world and I'll do all of this. And you go, you're bananas. Like you're talking shit. You're just like a Muppet there talking, you know, like you're just saying what you think we want to hear, but I'm not feeling you. I'm not feeling you. And that's the thing about the feeling, like, is sometimes it's like not even thinking with your head. It's like, for me, it's like, it's this quick instinctual. But having said that, that goes out of the window. The meaning I have feelings with people. Which goes back to romantic partnership. Yeah. You know, like that goes, like all of that is, it sounds really good and fine. But the minute, like, feelings come into it, like how do we really see someone, because there is this whole emotional weight behind how we see them and how we want them to be and how we expect them to be, even though, you know, I could be saying I'm really chilled and laid back till my face is blue, but that ain't true when I'm in love. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah. I triggers happen, you know? So how do you really do that when you are with someone that you are romantic with?
Yeah. I think there are a few things which come to mind here. So you said expectations, and I think that's something which crops up all the time in romantic relationships, any relationship, but romantic relationships, people have certain expectations of what their partner should be like or how they should act in certain situations. And when those aren't met, then it can create a sense of, oh, this person isn't for me, or this person doesn't really get me or doesn't get my values or any of this stuff. But often what's missing is that there is a lack of agreement which is being created between you. So those expectations have some, you know, opportunity to be fulfilled or to not be fulfilled and the person to decline that they're going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the managing of expectations from a place of agreement, which is critical to this actually working in terms of the communication. Otherwise, you just project all these things onto people. They don't have a clue what you're projecting onto them. And then you're going, see, they're not the one for me. Look, they don't do da-da-da-da-da-da-da, you know?
Could you have a practical example of what you're saying with the expectations versus agreement and how you need to have an agreement and to what you then end to what you said at the end with, like, oh, look, they're doing this. That means that proves that they're not for me. Like, do you have a practical example that we can?
Sure. I think there are a few things which could, you know, there could be really simple things.
Yeah. Right?
Just the way they are. If you're living in a place together, the way they are in the house, like, right. are they the person who is already doing all the chores that you expect of them, you know,
great.
Taking out the bin and all these things, or you know, whatever, you know, housework, like the very menial things which can very easily be pushed onto one side, and, you know, one party might be completely unaware of it unless the other one expresses, like, oh, this is my experience, right? It feels like it's all on me to do this. You know, when are we going to actually create a partnership and a teamwork in this situation? And once you've expressed that, once you've said, like, this is my experience, then if there's an unwillingness to actually do something about it, then, you know, you might have a problem. But if there's a willingness to go, oh, you know, I just get that I wasn't present to this impact on you.
So then, to really, like, in layman terms, like, are you saying, like, for example, if I'm on the only one hoovering and taking out the bin and, you know, cooking and doing the dishes and I'm not saying anything, then I'm just doing it, but I'm not saying anything. I'm just being passive aggressive. I'm getting moody. I'm annoyed. And all of a sudden there's a fight. And then I burst out. I do everything. You don't care. You just take me for your maid. I'm not being paid for this. What the fuck? You know, like, you live here too. You need to pull your weight.
Yeah.
Is that what you mean by that person? Like, he would not have, he doesn't know. Maybe he thinks I really enjoy hoovering, and which I really don't. I hate it. So, you know, maybe he thinks I love hoovering, and maybe he thinks he's doing me a favor because I get to do my womanly duties whilst I'm being really pissed off. So if we go to the extreme, it would be me complaining to all my girlfriends and saying, you know, this and that, and I'm doing all this and I'm doing all that, and then they go, oh girl, he doesn't appreciate you, throw him to the curb. And then I go home and I'm like, dude, we had this fight about hoovering an hour ago and I didn't see you pick up a single hoover, and so we're done. Is that what you mean by?
Yeah, I think that's a good extreme example of, mm-hmm. of what it can look like. And it's not about the hoovering, it's about, like,
it's about the not dishes and everything else.
You know, like, that's what shows up as a front-facing problem. Mm-hmm. And then there's always what's behind it, right? And in that situation that you're describing, what's missing fundamentally is that one party is withholding how they feel from the other for whatever reason, either because they don't feel they can express that, and or there's some sort of fear of expressing that, or they've never done that before, so it's not something that comes to their mind that they can do that, and or the habit is just to have expectations without creating agreements, so they've never really been taught like how to cultivate a relationship, which is a partnership, as opposed to just, you know, one person does one thing, the other person does another thing, and then hopefully it just sort of works by osmosis. So I think that's one way of looking at it for sure. You know, the using a banal example is helpful, I think, because it captures the kind of mundanity of why people break up often. Like there isn't something really significant necessarily that happens. We just kind of make a judgment based on some sort of physical interaction or, you know, something someone says. And then we're like, no, this can't be it. No, this isn't for me. And the judgment, you know, leads you to go, okay, I'm done.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess it's also the thing with the expectation is like, you know, I would think that, well, he must at least know that I don't actually enjoy doing all the house chores. Like, you know, I'm working during the day, I'm coming home, like, you know, it's a lot. And so, but he may see it differently. He may go, well, you know, I took her out to the restaurant, you know, we're going on a holiday, which I'm paying for. And, you know, I'm quiet when she does her chores. I don't disturb her. I leave her be. She gets to do, you know, she likes to have the house clean the way she wants it. I mean, I don't know what he's thinking, right? But I'm just imagining. So maybe both parties think that they're doing right by the other.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, you know, there's this whole volcano about to erupt any minute now. So I sort of want to go back a little bit to really seeing people, like to really see people. Like if we're to take away like the so much the philosophy, we could even move away from the philosophical stuff, but in the sense that, you know, I guess I use the example of romantic partnership because obviously I find that those are usually a lot more emotionally charged for most of us.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is where, you know, our little monster comes out, you know, for a lot of us. I mean, we are inseparable oftentimes, you know, in the dating. So it's like how, like, you know, if you're there, like, and you're meeting someone and, you know, obviously, you're getting to know them, so you're aware of that. You know that you, I mean, not everybody is aware of this, but most of us, I think we're aware that, you know, when you meet someone new, you know it takes time to get to know them. So let's take it down to like 6 months down the line.
Yeah.
You feel like you've got a pretty good idea. You know, you've hosted them in many ways. And so, you know, you feel like you know that person, you feel attached, you've bonded chemically and all of that. So, like, how do you really see the person for who they are? Like, even especially like maybe, so no, wait, so that's only 6 months. So let's take it like a bit further, a year, year and a half, when those hormones like starts to calm down a little bit and your frontal cortex starts to kick in a bit again and you can start to reason a little bit and see reality, quote unquote reality. But it may be very skewed, you know. I think as a lot of us, we realize sometimes we may not really know who we've been with. I mean, we feel like we do, but we don't really know them for who they are. I think in the same way that we can also feel that they didn't really know who, I don't feel they got really to know me, or they saw me a certain way that maybe it wasn't, you know, they had this image in their mind, right? And so it's that image in our mind that is stopping us sometimes to see a partner for who they are. And so how, because you don't know you're doing it when you're doing it. If you're in a relationship and you're like, wait, and you're listening and you go, wait, well, how do I actually know, like, where do I start? Like, how do I see my partner for who they are? Like, have I just been projecting and imagining a persona and that's not who they are? Like, how do I do this? Like, how do I get to see them for who they are now?
You know, the very simple answer is you start to question. So, you know, any time that I would notice for myself that a thought process would happen in a new relationship, which was based on something I had thought in an old relationship, I would get present to the fact, like, this thought that I'm having right now has nothing to do with this person.
Can you give an example?
Sure. And, you know, this is something I have to own. But there was a time when I wasn't a good partner. And the way that I behaved was I tried to push the person away. And there were times where I just wasn't as attracted to them anymore. Mm. And, yeah. You know, then I would find that showing up in moments in a new relationship, even though really I had no doubt about my attraction for this person that I was with. But what was happening, you know, in terms of my survival mechanism, everything else was telling me, no, you're not attracted to them. Get out of this situation. Like, this is what's, you know, and it was the sabotaging mechanism essentially, which was playing up. So in the new relationship, I just got present. Hang on a second. Like, I don't believe that. Like, that's just some old thought, which I don't need to hold on to. Like, that's not actually my belief. That's just a thought which the brain has automatically predicted is how I see this situation. So when I can separate my thoughts from me, then there's an opportunity to question, is this actually how I see them? Is this actually what I believe or what I think of them? Whereas if we just take all our thoughts as us, then everything which is coming in is just like, oh, okay, this is what I think about them now. No, I love them. No, I don't love them. All that kind of rubbish. Mm. And that's the normal situation where you're questioning constantly whether or not you really love them, really like them, all these things, because you're listening to all the stimuli which is coming in as if it's all giving you different points of view, which you need to hang on to, rather than looking for yourself out there in the world, at the person, seeing their values, seeing what your values are. Do I feel alignment with this person right now? And if I don't, is there a possibility of creating alignment in the future, given, you know, the values that we share or don't share? And then those types of questions open up an opportunity to see whether there's a way to move forward from where you're at, or whether or not you're going to say, no, this doesn't align with me for what I want to have. So I'm going to look for something which does. But it's really that initial separation from who I am, from my thoughts, that allows me not to bring old patterns into the future.
But that's not easy to do, though. Because, I mean, I get the whole thing pushing away, because it's a protection mechanism, you know, especially if you get, and I don't know if that's sort of the what you experienced back then, but it's like, if you feel like that person's gonna, if it's almost like when the stakes are high, when you like someone and you're like, they're gonna hurt me, unconsciously, like you sort of think that's what happens. Like, you think they're gonna hurt you, and so self-sabotaging mode is in high gear, and you know, the party has just got started, and it's like, you know, and then you know you create fights out of nowhere, you push them away. I mean, it's like you're blinded. And I think that the reason why I bring this up is, like, you know, you're saying about separating the thoughts and, you know, and separating the thoughts with your heart, or I can't remember what you said, like, or your emotions. And then you realize, actually, is this really how I feel about the person? Because the whole thing of, you know, not being attracted to them anymore, that is also a mechanism of, like, you know, when you're like, well, it's this protection mechanism. Sometimes there's a good reason why we're not attracted to them anymore. But, you know, if it's like, if it's sort of like fleeting in this way, then there's something else to look at. And I think my question to you is that, do you reckon that's why when it's being ripped away from us, like in the breakup, like when they go with that, say, like, I'm done with your bullshit. And all of a sudden, all this feeling flows up out of, and you're like, where is all this love coming from? Because all of a sudden, like, you're almost like in a bit of a state of shock. And then all your feelings are allowed to be, like, it's like the shock stops your mind from going almost. And it's like all these feelings come up and you go, I fucking love them. What was I doing? You know, is that maybe like one moment where, or maybe it's delusion, but is that the one moment where we truly see maybe the person for who they are and what we did?
I would hope not. But it's definitely a moment where that can bring that forth. Certainly, you know, it can really bring the emotions to a heightened state, and it can create a level of connection in a breakup, which had been missing prior to that. I've definitely had that experience before, but I've also had the opposite where like the relationship ended in a way which was like someone pulling off a band-aid.
Yeah. I mean, so, sometimes it's a good breakup. Like, it's not that, but like, you know, when you have those breakups where you like, shit, you know?
Like, yeah.
You really did actually care.
Absolutely. Like, I have had very few relationships where I don't have some sort of friendship with the person that I've dated. Because there are important people in my life. You know, got to really share something special and grow in different ways from that experience. So I, you know, as much as possible, I cherish that and I'm grateful for it.
So like maybe if it was like less dramatic. So let's say if you know, things are going well, you maybe bicker a little bit. But you know, when you're like when things are going well, I think maybe that's also a time where we may not really actually see the other person. Maybe, I'm just asking. But like, how do you know? I guess my question that I'm not sure I got like a whole, I feel like there's, like, how do you, I guess I still feel like I need to ask, like, how do you really know if you're seeing that person? Because especially when it's going well, I think that's when a lot of people sometimes build these images in their mind of who the other person really is. And then they get so disappointed a few years in going, oh my God, I had no idea that's what they could do or who they would be like, or, you know?
Totally. Yeah, I get what you're saying. Like where you've created a kind of illusion of who this person is based on, you know, what you want them to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they don't meet that expectation, that's when you're like, whoa, I didn't know they were like that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So no, I get that. So how do you avoid that situation kind of arising, or how do you know that you're not going to fall into that trap? Is that kind of your question?
Well, I guess, how do you know if you're seeing them? How do you know you're seeing your partner for who they are?
Again, for me, it comes from not an attachment to who they are. Like, I think there's a, you know, for me, like the question, who are we or who are you, is as dangerous a question as trying to find your purpose.
Why is that dangerous?
Well, it leaves you on a rabbit hole of like, if I haven't found it, then what? It's like, it creates like existential crises for people and searches for meaning in their life, rather than just getting to be present with the people that they're with and the people, you know, the more we're attached to finding out who someone is really, the less joy I think you're likely to have in a relationship. Whereas if you're never actually attached to the outcome or the quest of the question, who are you really? Then there's a real space for growth, which is boundless, because you're not saying, oh, I've now figured them out. No, it's like, oh, I'm always curious about who this person is really, but not with an answer being the key to have at the end of this question. It's just being in what we call the mode of questioning. So anytime I show up with a view, which is, it seems like it's being fixed in that point, it's like, okay, what can I question in this moment about who this person is? What can I give up being right about as a point of view, which is leading me to see them this way, which I've projected onto them through whatever thoughts and emotions are coming up for me?
So actually, yeah. So when you were saying that, I realized like I was asking the question from the wrong direction, really. Because I kind of like, I know we spoke about this before, but somehow I did not really absorb it. That makes sense. Like, I haven't really processed it or digested it, because actually it's not about, because when I say, how do we know we're really seeing our partner, that we're not projecting onto them? How do we know we're seeing them for who they are? Correct me if I'm wrong, but what you were actually saying is, it's not about finding out who they are, it's about keeping discovering them and like having it like an open-ended question almost. It's like, well, the horizon is open, let's see what's on the next step. It's like, it's not about finding the answer, it's just about being open to what is in that moment. Is that what you're saying?
That is the perfect way to put it. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Right. So how does that look like? Because I can understand now, you know,
yeah.
you know, it's only an hour later. I realized I was actually fixed as to what it was that I thought we were going to be talking about. And actually, right? That's a perfect example, actually. I'm like, oh, I know exactly what this is going to be about. And then, oh, no, you don't. So how does that look like? Because, yeah, how does that feel? How does that look like? Like, do you have an example? Like, how? Because obviously, if I was to ask you, you know, not because obviously that's your private life, but like I'm saying, like, if I was to ask you to describe your partner, you'd have an idea in your mind.
Yeah.
Right? So,
yeah, for sure.
So that is obviously a type of answer to that question of who they are. Mm. But what we're talking about here is that is not looking for the final answer.
Yes, absolutely. It's like there is a now, like there's a way in which I see her right now. And I would speak from that if someone was to ask me, oh, how, you know, tell me about Kim, you know, Camille, tell me about your partner or whatever it happens to be. But I'm not attached to like, that's who she is really. Like, it's just like, that's just how I see her in this moment. And even how I, you know, create that will differ from moment to moment because what's present will be different. So there isn't a fixity to even different moments in time as to how I would capture that.
So, yeah, because obviously there is the essence of someone, right? Like there is an essence to us that's sort of like that you can't really erase unless, you know, I mean, it may be dulled down over certain periods of your life if you're going through stuff. But effectively, there's an essence in people that's always there. But then it's all the things around it, like all those different qualities that we think defines a person that is actually not fixed. We may be going through things in life. However, those things in life, eventually we get past them. And so those things that may have defined us in that time, and it's like saying like that child when he was 7, well, that's how he is when he's 47. It's like, well, his essence, like maybe his joy is still there, but however, he's learned a few things along the way. So he's not going to be the same identical person. He wouldn't be able to function if he was. I mean, throwing a tantrum every time he doesn't get his orange juice. I don't know. It's, you know, it wouldn't work.
Yeah, like absolutely.
Because I guess the bit like I wanted to sort of round up on was, you know, if we were to bring it back to us, to ourselves.
Yeah.
Because obviously, like, I really like the idea of having this open slate.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the expression, because people usually say a clean slate or whatever. But like an open slate with your partner, that you don't have the absolute definition of who they are. Because that's actually really annoying when you know that someone thinks they really know you, you almost want to like rebel and show them the opposite because it's so patronizing. But so, you know, so having that open answer to who they are. So how do we do that with ourselves? You know, how do we have a clean state with us so that we can basically move forward free?
For sure. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so much of it starts from questioning where have you created an assumption about who you are really? Which lives for you as I am this, like I am shy, I am anxious, I am an introvert, I am an extrovert, I am, you know, a lefty, I am, you know, whatever it happens to be your particular judgment, which you've created, like, this is who I am really. It's like, okay, like what made that so, you know, where has that just become the way you live without even questioning any of it? Right. Like I was, I would have said until I was, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, was it maybe 2014? I would have considered myself straight. I now consider myself bisexual. I'm not questioning that now. It's like, that's just my experience. It's like, I'm bisexual. And that came from being curious, about a different perspective. It came out of, you know, someone kissing me. And I was like, That's actually quite nice. You know, like, right, let me look at that. And I did. So it was a complete discovery for me because I was open to discovering something new. I wasn't like, no, I'm a straight person. I can't go there. The fact that I've enjoyed it, this, you know, just is the fact that I've enjoyed it. No, I just say, oh, that's really interesting. Let me see where this takes me. So that's just an aspect of where the identity gets constructed. Like, there are different and variable aspects of how our identities get constructed. And there are patterns which get formed from really early on. And some of it you might have done, you know, work on in CBT, and or maybe not. But the, you know, the foundation of all of it is, you know, it tends to be like three or four, something happens. And there's an experience which you have, right? And the experience is there's something wrong. And as a child, you don't have the language or the, you know, the brain to be able to really interpret the reality as is. You just see that something happened and it's not the way that, and you feel some, you know, like something's not good about it, or you did something wrong. And then you project onto yourself, there's something wrong with you, right? And that becomes the foundation from which life looks, not in all moments, because that would be horrible. But when other things happen in the future, it comes back to there being something wrong with you. Oh, this happened. Like, this person didn't want to be my friend because there's something wrong with me. This girl doesn't like me or doesn't want to be with me anymore because there's something wrong with me. Right. And gets constantly filtered back to this perspective of a child. And a lot of people live in relationships where they haven't escaped this five-year-old child. And so they wonder why relationships don't work for them, because they haven't got to the source of where they created their view of who they are, and then the view of who they can be for others and what it can look like in a relationship. They're so caught up in all of these past narratives about their life, whether they're conscious or unconscious of it. And it just continues to go further and further into their future.
I think people get stuck. I mean, definitely, especially things like triggers.
Yeah,
that's definitely something that, like, in CBT we covered, and it's called the rules for living. I don't know if you've come across of that.
Divorced for living, did you say?
No, divorced for living. No. Rules, I can't say British R's. So rules, R-U-L-E-S, yeah. Rules for living.
Rules for living, okay.
Yeah, and it's like a concept that's basically, I wouldn't be able to explain it briefly in a good way, but the way I'd explain it at this stage is that, you know, for example, if you may have noticed that there are things that really, really trigger you, right? So there's one thing that really triggers you, and it could be, and again, it's about the words, right? So let's say someone said to you, accused you of something, or said, you know, like online, they had a comment and they said something and it really triggered you.
Yeah.
And for someone else, it'd be like, yeah, it was a bit rude, but, you know, whatever. But it triggers you really, really deeply. And you have like this instant reaction where you go from 0 to 100. Like, it's just really like, it makes you feel like really upset, and you're just like, oh. And what that can be is because it has touched on something really deep that you formed when you were really small. So it could be like, for example, you thought, so let's say they said to you, I'm going to make a metaphor, so I don't divulge anything too private. Let's say that if when you were a kid and you thought, oh, I am a mushroom. Okay, does that make no sense, right? But let's say a mushroom was a really bad thing, right? Yeah. So I am a mushroom. So because that's really bad, it's really, really bad. I need to make sure that part of me never gets seen, that doesn't get shown. So because of that, you have rules for living on top of that, so that bit that feels this way never gets touched. So you have really strong rules. So for people not to think that you are mushroom, you have to make sure that you're always smiling, that you're always perfect, that you're always this and that. And, you know, you can't really let them see you. But the minute someone says, you know, in the comment, let's say on social media, you are mushroom, and you go, fuck! Because your rule for living, the idea of the rule for living, when you haven't worked on it, is very, very strict.
Yeah.
And so when it's really, really strict and hard, it breaks. So part of CBT is to work at making it a bit more flexible, because you could maybe agree that being mushroom is not great because it's a fungi and it could go moldy.
Yeah.
Right. So you want to make sure you get a bit of sun or whatever, you know. So, but it's how can you make it so you change, you cognitively change that rule for living. And I guess, I don't even know how we got to this point, but basically one of the things is that this is where maybe people are very blinded online when they get very triggered or they get triggered and then they troll other people's social media, for example, because they feel this deep, deep, deep injustice. They've been deeply offended by something. They're very much triggered. There's something in them. I don't know if that works that way, in that way too, when people are trolling, but either way, strong reactions, because often that strong reaction is very infantile, really. It's like a tantrum. You may not show it. You may not even respond to it in the comment, but you in your room at home and you're feeling all kinds of things and it feels really uncomfortable and you can get very triggered. You get downspiraled because you think like you're a piece of shit, basically.
Yeah.
And so part of it is like you were saying about, you know, things forming when we're very young. And if we don't address those things, it can really stop us from actually living our full life. And I think part of what CBT has really done for me, and actually part of why I'm saying like today that in this last year, things have changed for me in the sense that there isn't really much that people can say. Mm-hmm. Like I feel much more at ease and at peace within because I've had to look at certain shadows inside or beliefs that I had, and they're usually very infantile. So if people have strong reactions, if you have a strong reactions, it's worth looking at what's happening. And people often think it's very infantile wording. It'd be, so I said, I am mushroom, but it could be something like, I am bad, I am mean, I am destructive, whatever it is that people, you know, it's a very childish thing to say, you know, it's like childish words that, oh, I mean, you mean, it's like, no one is really, I mean, you know what I'm saying? It's like, that's kind of what I was referring to. So yes, that's what like the clean slate of ourselves. It's not that easy. You have to really look at it and sometimes get help.
It's a challenge.
And I'm not there yet, but yeah, it definitely is.
For sure. Like it's a challenge because, you know, for sure for me, were it not for coaching, that wouldn't have transpired. Because I didn't even conceive of the possibility of seeing myself from a different place. I just was a shy, anxious, you know, adult who'd been that way all his life. Mm-hmm. And the idea that I could create a relationship however I would like, based on there being no past hurt coming forth into the future, would have been crazy. It's like, no, like the Sam who was an idealistic 18-year-old who first fell in love was like a puppy dog. And after that, the experience of a breakup and the hurt was like, oh, I need to be more cautious. Oh, I shouldn't be so romantic. All these different beliefs for a long time, which were formed as a consequence of that experience. And it was only from really getting to look at that experience and getting to get complete on it that I was able to move forward without any of the pain from the past coming forth into new relationships. And there are different ways in which people can do this. Sometimes it actually looks like getting in communication with past partners. Like one of the most surprising aspects for me is where I let go of a resentment towards a partner from like 5 or 6 years previously. After I, you know, this was a person who had questioned my trust. And that was a value which was really key for me. And so for someone to question my trust was like, I don't want to have anything to do with them. But as I kept growing, so did my, you know, willingness to question that point of view of how I'd seen her. And so I remember being in a leadership course and I didn't have a way of contacting her by phone because she didn't, you know, I think she blocked my number or whatever, as it tends to happen in these situations. And but for some reason, she was still a contact on Facebook Messenger. So I was like, all right, I'm going to leave a series of voice messages and I'm just going to really honor her because I'd let go of whatever was there for me around that relationship and feeling like she hadn't understood me and all this other stuff. And so I just expressed to her like how grateful I was for what we got to share together and for the love that we'd had. And I was sorry for how the things had ended given, you know, what we had shared. And I said, I really hope that you get to have, or you have, the love that everyone deserves. And what happened next was what was interesting for me, is that she replied. And she replied from a place where she shared, like, you must think I hate you. I don't. I quickly saw, you know, that you're a good guy. I was just dealing with all this sort of stuff in Oxford, and I felt all this judgment from others in that place. And this is how I, you know, I acted as a consequence. Mm. And I just got to see this woman newly, from all of the maturity and how she'd grown as a human being inside of the time, you know, that we've been not together. And yeah. So suddenly all the anger which I had around that disappeared in that moment. And it didn't just impact that. It gave me a freedom to be in other areas without even wanting or knowing that that was what was needed. It just cleared something from my space, which had I'd been holding on to without even knowing.
It makes so much sense, because like, it really does set you free when someone, it's like that, it's like almost like a piece of forgiveness, but it's also like shows like how perception is so important. So like how you interpreted that story you had with her, how it could change in one instant because of that honest exchange you both had. And that, you know, that, you know, that's really meaningful. And I think in the same way as, I can only speak for me here, but I would not want to date me in my 20s. I have to assume that, you know, partners have changed too, you know, like the, you know, if someone, if there's one person in particular, I'm looking back, I'm like, that's the one person was just like, oof, that, yeah, it was a very odd feeling when I felt like it was like this cold chill down my spine when it was over. I felt like I didn't know who I was dealing with at all. It felt like night and day. But obviously there was a lot of perception and how, you know, and the level of the lack of maturity I probably had at the time and that kind of stuff. And I think is giving the grace that as much as we hope that we've changed and grown, they to give them that same benefit that they probably have as well. And they're probably like different people now.
100%.
Or, you know, or different partners. I mean, you know, different partners to their partners.
Yeah, 100%. Like, yeah. Forgiveness is something which, you know, people can move on and then you're still in the space of not forgiving. And you're the one who's having to hold on to all the pain because you're in the space of not being willing to give it up, right? And you wonder, like, oh, why am I still feeling this way? It's like, because you're not willing to actually give up what's in the way of you actually having what you want. You want to be right that, no, this person isn't worthy of my forgiveness. Oh, so I'm never going to forgive them for what they did to me. Okay, great. How's that going for you?
Yeah, right?
When you are allowing yourself to give up being right about anything which you are either, which isn't serving you, whether you're present to it yet or not, then there's such an opportunity to create a clearing in your life, whether it's in romantic relationships or anything, because there's so much that we hold on to unnecessarily. And there's so much that we can't see without someone else, you know, mirroring us and recreating us and really getting us an opportunity to see what's in the way. Mm. I was having a conversation yesterday with a friend of mine, and he was sharing how he became a coach as being inspired by me. And I was just seeing like how I can make a difference to him in that conversation. And what I didn't expect was for him to start to share about his relationship and what he'd gone through there. And we just looked in that conversation at how he could go from a space of feeling like he was trapped in that relationship to now he had a choice. And by the end of the conversation, he was just really clear of what he was going to do next, because, you know, he had created a binary situation in that, and he couldn't see, you know, any other pathway. But when someone else is there with you in that conversation and asking you the kinds of questions which allow you to look for yourself into your life as what's going on, then you can actually make, you know, rapid progress very, very fast.
Mm. Yeah, you do need someone else to, you know, you need someone like who can help you see it, see what you're not seeing. because it's so difficult to do it on our own. Like we can sometimes we do, but they can be quite painful realization. You know, it's like what you learn from a relationship or learn from a breakup or learn from a divorce, that kind of stuff. You know, you learn a lot about yourself in those times, right? You know, it's like really, really. But if you don't want to have to go through that, those sometimes they can be like, they're not always all painful when you learn, but you know, sometimes they can be very painful and draining on your energy. But if you want to have less emotionally charged way of doing it, that's not so painful. It's to really to get someone who can just look at you, whether it's like a therapist, a coach, or if you have a friend who's very perceptive, who can be unbiased, you know, that's not as easy to find. But like, you know, yeah, it does make a big difference because it's so helpful, because I think we all really want, deep down, we just want peace and just be happy and whatever that means, you know, for anyone, but just to be, we don't want to be the person who, I mean, I most certainly don't want to be the person who leaves a trail of disaster, you know, like I don't want to be that. I don't think any of us wants to. So if there's any opportunity to ever be able to feel more at peace and thereby be nicer to be around, I think that's something that, that's something that I definitely support. I think that's super important.
Yeah, you know, 100%. The opportunity is really boundless when it comes to what a relationship could look like if you really were willing to look at, one, where have you created a relationship rule book, which you don't actually want to abide by anymore, right? Like I threw away my relationship rule book in, I think, late 2019, when I ended up moving in, actually the opposite way. She ended up moving in with me before we'd ever started dating.
Oh, that is definitely throwing that rule book away. Yeah, now you know, we're talking, wait a minute, this is wait, what? Oh, I like it. Tell us the story. What's that? Hang on, wait. So did you know you were gonna be romantic before she moved in? That was the situation.
No, we had been romantic before she moved in. But what had happened is she was someone who had coached me probably about a year and a bit before. Mm-hmm. I'd then done a lot more work in personal development. Mm-hmm. And she came to something which I was leading. Mm-hmm. And she was like, who is this person? Like, I don't know who this person is. I'm curious about that.
She didn't recognize you.
Well, no, in the sense of just like, she didn't know that I could be that way.
Right.
And then, you know, what happened is we just got talking. And then we really dealt with some really serious things which had happened in her life in the conversation. And I just remember the space where she went from experiencing, you know, this real pain over what had happened as a child to just feeling heard and seen. And that's when she clicked into, you know, wanting to be, you know, something more than friends. And, you know, that was a very, very radical shift for me. And within a week, I remember, because I already had so much trust in this woman, saying to her, I want to spend the rest of my life with you.
Wow.
Not like saying it wasn't a proposal of marriage, to be clear. It was just literally, I was so clear in that moment that, like, you know, this person really got me for, and was someone who was really committed to their growth and was something which is a value for me. Mm-hmm. And so we lived together. And then after 3.5 months, when I was really happy, she just came into where I was working one day, and she just said, I'm not in love with you anymore and I'm moving back to my mom's. Mm-hmm. And I was just a little bit perplexed. And
well, anyone would be.
Yeah. So I remember walking into our bedroom and just saying, when did you figure that out? She said, oh, 2 days ago. Oh, okay. Is this another one of those times where you change your mind? Because you change your mind quite a lot.
Oh, and she, ouch. Yeah.
And she said, no, you've just got to get, I'm not the same person as I was when we started dating. Mm. And I was like, okay. And then an hour later, she packed up her stuff and she'd left. But the beauty of that relationship was it gave me an opportunity to completely rewrite what a relationship could look like. So when I came to have my next relationship, I didn't have anything.
So that's not who you're still with?
No.
Oh, I thought it was going to be a happy ending. That's why I was like laughing and being, oh my God. Like, because I know you're with someone now. So I thought that was her.
No, it was.
Oh, that, right. So, that, oh.
But that relationship taught me so much about relationships. It taught me about my capacity to love, you know, yeah. in a way like when someone, like it used to be this, right? If someone is dealing with problems, I don't want to be with them because I'm dealing with my own. Uh-huh. What I got in that situation was, I can, if I love someone, I can be with them no matter what they're dealing with.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter how serious it is. It's something that we can work through together. And that's mm-hmm. what we got to do, you know?
Yeah.
And that, you know, we took intimacy from something which was something which she couldn't enjoy because of her past to something which she got to actually take pleasure in. Mm-hmm. For the first time again, right? Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. so that was really an amazing experience to be able to work with her, to have that opportunity. But beyond that, because I'd moved in with her so quickly, I was never had any fear afterwards of, you know, how soon can I move in with someone before it could work?
Mm-hmm,
so mm-hmm. I think it's probably about 3 or 4 months in that I was clear to myself that I was going to ask Camille to move in. Within a period of months.
And that's your current partner, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's someone who I'm clear, like I'm going to spend the rest of my life with. And that's just because that's just what I felt. I was clear on our values were aligned. And, you know, that for me is one of the key things which I learned from that relationship ending. Before, what I was doing with relationships is I was being like, I'll only be happy if it's them. So there was always some sort of conditional based on like, it needs to be them for it to work or for me to be happy or whatever it was, rather than what are my values? Like, what are the values that I have for myself and for what I want in a relationship? And I was doing this exercise with a friend who was coaching me through the situation. And he was just looking, and I was looking at it. I was like, oh, well, passion. Passion's a real key one for me. Curiosity, adventure, and wonder. Mm-hmm. And from that place, I started when I went back to dating, looking for that, not for a particular person, just for someone who emanated those kind of values or could emanate those kind of values given the chance. Mm-hmm. And so curiosity is how I would go and date rather than any attachment to finding a particular person.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, Camille showed up and it quickly became clear, like this was someone that, you know, I really wanted to get to know. And we got to know each other. You know, part of the beauty of the lockdown was that we spent so much time together, yeah. you know, in that bubble.
Yeah.
So I got to, you know, within less than 6 months, I think, say like, I want to move in with you by April.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened. And, you know, she had to work past, you know, what that would look like, whether that's something she wanted initially and the fears that were there. But because I was so clear about it and I was so willing to be with her all the way through the steps that it was going to take for her to really feel comfortable, there was no problem in the transition.
Mm. Oh, I loved it. This is great. Like, yeah. I always love a good love story as well. I'm such a sucker for it. I'm like, oh yeah, go on, tell me. I love this. I think definitely being able to, you know, that thing that you said, that's really key, like, you know, throwing away the rule book, because I think it's a challenge that a lot of us feels that we, because there's this part of us that feels that we need to learn from experiences so we're not, so we don't leave ourselves so open and vulnerable for disappointment or hurt, right? So however big or small that is, you know, everyone has different experiences. But unfortunately, what that also does is that I think it does really get in the way of potential. You know, when you feel like you've been disappointed over and over again, it's really hard to open your heart to someone new, you know, without being cautious. And actually, you are saying is to really, and I guess like, you know, out there, you know, picking up the first person on the street, like it's not, that's not, that would be the other extreme, right? But like, I guess when you meet someone and you feel that your heart is choosing them, And there's something about them that makes you wonder, you know, what else, and you keep wanting to see them and all of that stuff. Is that at some point you have to make a decision to let the past be in the past?
Yeah.
And I think that's the bit that's very difficult for all of us. And that's where I guess almost like what we were talking about this whole time is that is not have like being open to not knowing the to not actually looking for the definite answer, because you can never know. And like, this could be a great opportunity. You don't know. It doesn't have to, just because you've all the relationship in the past have failed doesn't mean that you can't make one that's going to, and again, fail is a subjective word, but it doesn't mean that this one isn't going to be the person who's going to reciprocate for a very, very long time, and that you're going to be really happy for a very, very long time with that person and grow with them. And that's the bit that's hard, because that's a leap of faith and that's being hopeful. And that's something that we don't allow us to be, I think, in dating in this day and age.
It's funny because we rely on blind faith in so many different areas of life. And yet this is one where we are more circumspect because of our past. And
what other areas do you think we really base on faith? Like when we get on a plane?
I think absolutely. Yeah. That's a good example. People rely on in religion. People are relying on a blind faith in most cases, you know, unless they might say they've seen some image of a God but you know, they're relying on faith in political situations. Why are they for that party? They have faith in the party or something like this. There are all sorts of weird faith-based traditions which are there consciously or unconsciously in the way we live lives. But with relationships, we aren't always quick to have faith in something or have faith that we can have it. Why? Because we have some sort of view which is in the background, like we can't ever be happy. Oh, it's never gonna happen for us, right? So whatever that background belief is, then you'll look for more evidence and you'll probably encounter experiences which are going to provide more, you know, validity to your judgment. And you're like, whoa. See, I told you it can't happen for me. You know, it's too late for me. You know, it's too late for me to fall in love again, or whatever it happens to be. And all
of that. How do you change that particular train of thought, though?
Yeah,
like,
I think
too late. It's never going to happen because, you know.
Well, what I would do with someone is I would just walk them through the beliefs that they've created, where they created it, what's showing up, and looking at like what are the different thoughts and emotions that are, what's the experience that you have around this, and really breaking it down and seeing like where is there a truth to any of this? Can you see a truth to this? And what new beliefs can be created? And I look at patterns in language constantly that people are forming and seeing, okay, where did that come from? Where, you know, where's the first time that you started thinking in this way or saying this to yourself? And the more we get present to that, the more they start to unravel the, you know, or peel back the onion, if you like, of where all this sort of stuff started to come in. And it became almost part of the armor from which they live their life. And what I like to do is essentially remove the armor of crap for people by just asking the kinds of questions and helping them and challenging their thinking in a way which helps them see something new. And gives them a confidence in themselves that it's actually possible. Like a really important aspect for me of coaching is that you speak into someone's greatness. So if someone doesn't believe they're lovable, you really create them as someone who can have the love that they want. Because if you don't believe in them, they're not going to believe in themselves. So it's imperative that you create such a safe container that they feel like it's actually possible, because it's so easy to just, you know, stay with your own point of view based on your own past experience.
Mm. Yeah. No, I think that thing with the safe container is very important. And I think definitely making sure that, because I think often, you know, I know we need to round up soon, but like, I feel that, no, I don't know if, you know, how this resonates, but I feel that when I really like someone, you know, when I'm into, obviously, which, you know, if I am with someone, it's because I'm really into them and I really like them. All right. So when I am with someone, when I'm with a partner, I feel like part of it doesn't. I say like part of my job. It doesn't feel like a job, by the way. But it's just like, I guess it's just a choice of word here. But one of the things that I feel that I'm really compelled to do is that they can, especially if they're not, especially if they don't feel, because we all have insecurities, you know. And especially if I can see that they have an insecurity, maybe they used to be really overweight, or there's something, or whatever, you know, they miss it, whatever it is, there's all this stuff blinding them. And it's like part of my thing is, and I really love it, is to make sure that they see what I see, which is like I love every inch of them, you know, like I think like they're the bee's knees. And, you know, I know that when they walk out that door, everyone's going to be looking at, that's my perception of them. Cause I really think like the minute they leave, everyone's going to see what I see. But my job is for them to feel that for themselves. And that's, I think, I don't know if that's what you were saying about, you know, like make sure that they feel that they are lovable. Cause I think, yeah, it's all very well and good to know. We have to know it for ourselves. Like, you know, we have to do the work to feel that we don't have a self-worth depending on someone, something or somebody else, because that's obviously you're disempowering yourself. Right. But one of the healing things in relationship is that we can actually help each other, nurture each other into actually letting go of the crap in the past. Because actually, oh wait, they saw that I am mushroom, but they still love me. Oh, so maybe mushroom isn't that bad. You know what I'm saying? Like maybe mushroom isn't real, or what I thought was mushroom, whatever. You know, it's like, it's actually when someone sees you for who you are and that they still love you, I feel like that's, I mean, that's all I want, really. Someone to actually really see me and to still love me. Like, because often that's how it feels like when you have a breakup. It's like, wait, they've seen this part of you or a part of you or a bit more of you that other people may not have seen. And they went, I'm out. It's not actually really what's going on, but that's how it feels. It feels like this deep rejection of who you are sometimes, right?
Absolutely.
This is where maybe we can, that's why actually relationships and romantic partners and be like the reason of this whole thing that we're talking today is that it is such a pivotal part of our lives, and it can really form us and define us. And it's like we need and I guess it needs to be dealt with a lot more self-awareness and you know, and I said that to myself first, you know, because I've definitely had bad behavior, and I probably still will have them, as you know, have other bad behaviors and stuff, you know, I mean, you know, I'm not above it by far. So but I think it's like it can be such a healing place when you really are with someone who really loves you, truly loves you and sees you and just loves you. So yeah, I think that's what I got.
Yeah, look, I think what you touched on is super important, because the lack of acceptance for oneself is something which then impacts the quality of a relationship that you can have. So when you create the space for someone to feel fully accepted, no matter how they are, like no matter what's happened, whether they've been abused, whether or not they have body insecurities, whether or not they have self-doubt or confidence or whatever it happens to be, which is there for them, if you can create that level of acceptance for them, then anything becomes possible in that relationship, because they feel seen and heard in a way that they've likely never felt seen and heard before. Right. You know, my partner was so amazing for me with my own like stuff, which I had back in the days with body insecurities. And it just, it created a space to, for intimacy, which was better than I'd ever had. And just a level of connection in that area, which I'd never had, because I didn't have any fear anymore of performance or size as a man or any of these other things which had got in the way in the past. Mm-hmm. So I was just able to be, and I am able to be with her, you know, without any of that crap coming up. And that just creates a space for this really beautiful connection.
Yeah. So Sam.
Yeah.
You know, I just wanted to give you like a really, really big thank you, because this has been, I've really loved how the conversation went, and you know, and especially like like not even coming from the same premise, because I completely like, I was like, oh, we're going to be talking from this angle. It's like, oh, wait, no. I it was such an example of, you know, how we interpret and how we're not really listening, you know, like I think for me, like I wasn't hearing you right. Cause the idea was from you. So obviously like it wasn't even my agenda and I misunderstood it. And so this was a perfect example of what we were trying to say here. And I've really, really enjoyed it. And I love hearing how you talk about your partner and your previous and your past partners as well. And it has been so, so wonderful. And so I just want to ask you before we leave, I want to ask you the same two finishing thoughts that I ask all of my guests. So if you don't mind. So the first one, the first one is, what do you wish you'd realized at 18? But by that, I mean, really realize on a molecular level, not just know in theory, but that you wish that you really understood at 18.
Yeah. I think it would have been around anxiety. It would have been, I don't have anxiety. I experience anxiety, but I don't have anxiety. Because once I got to question the reality I'd created about a lifetime of anxiety, I got to disappear it. So that was incredibly powerful for me in terms of the quality of the life that I now live.
No, yeah, but I'm a bit stunned because I'm having more male, like man guests, and you're now the second one in a row who in the last 3 weeks when I'm recording the podcast saying about anxiety. And it really shows how far we've come in a society that men actually express it, for one, and two, realize it. And it's just like, it just stunned me for a second. I didn't expect that answer because it's not something we usually hear men talk about. So yeah, so I just, yeah, I yeah, makes me really happy to hear that we are talking more about this. But also I like the how you worded it, that you don't have anxiety, you're experiencing, because it's almost like when we say I have anxiety, it's not so much that we have it, it's almost like it sounds like it has us, right? It has a hold on us.
Absolutely. And it becomes like a property. Wording.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so the second question is, what stuff do you not put up with anymore?
Yeah, I think it's limited thinking for myself. So whenever something shows up, and things show up, it's really like, okay, what's the opportunity here to go to work on this? You know, that I'm experiencing a constraint in this moment. But if I could see that this constraint was actually an opportunity for growth right now, then what might I discover, rather than feeling a space of resignation or a space of fear or whatever just comes up naturally for me in this moment? So I think that's a key one. And I guess the other thing is, I just don't put up with bullshit. Like, I'm really straight with people in the way I communicate. I don't try and have a pretense with the way I communicate. I don't enjoy that. And I find people tend to appreciate that.
Yeah, because it's refreshing. And because we all kind of want to be able to do that all the time. So we kind of, I'm generalizing, but like, I think people, those who appreciate it, is because they wish because they are this way, but also maybe also because they wish they were more like that, right? It's like, oh, that's so refreshing. That's exactly how I want to be able to communicate. You know, like they may have that thought. So I love that. So Sam, can you please tell us, where can people find you? How can they work with you? How can they catch your podcast? Give us all the good stuff.
Sure. Thanks so much, Angie. So you can find me at thephilosophicalcoach.com. That's my website. And I also have a website for the podcast, and the podcast is This Humean Life, and Humean is spelled H-U-M-E-A-N. And, you know, there are a couple of ways you could work with me. So I work with people one-to-one, and then I'm also at the moment launching a leadership course, which is for those who really want to go from being the passenger in their lives to the owner of their lives and showing up as a leader in every aspect of their life. More generally, you could also follow me on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram under The Philosophical Coach. But if you really want to just connect, you can also send me an email at sam@thephilosophicalcoach. But you know, check out the website and more than happy to have a chat, first of all, or you can also just book a call and we can go from there.
Thank you so much, Sam. Thank you. This has been so lovely.
Yeah, Angie, it's been such a pleasure. I've really enjoyed, you know, starting to get to know you in these two interactions. I'm looking forward to much more of that in the future.
Thank you. And that's our episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Please don't forget to rate, review, share it, subscribe it on iTunes, follow it on Spotify or whichever platform you listen from. However you show love is how you can support this show. Drop me your questions or suggestions for future episodes via the website at angie-s.com or come and find me on Instagram at Tool for Dish It Podcast. See you next week, and until then,
using health inappropriately.